3,873 women and men were accused of witchcraft in Scotland. These people were just that, people. But the confessions of those accused struck fear in the hearts of others. This fear allowed an estimated 2/3 of these people to be executed. Not much is known about what happened with the bodies of those who died during the trials, but one woman's grave was rediscovered by archaeologists in 2014.
Oh, Keisha.
That was such a witchy cackle you just did. You literally went, hee hee hee. Oh, I am sad. I am so sad for this.
Are you
one.
Ready?
Okay, yes, first, hello everyone, welcome to Odd Anthropology.
I was like, oh, yep, we're jumping in, even though I knew we were doing that. This is Tayshia.
And my name is Ivy, and how are you today, Tayshia? Before we get into the topic of the episode, what's going on in Tayshia land?
I am all right. You know, I've been going through life things, and I don't know how many of our listeners are at this point in their lives, but, you know, figuring out that probably going through perimenopause. So that's a fun fact about my life right now.
Ooh, that absolutely sucks. In a way, I kind of look forward to it to get it over with sooner.
Right.
But I also dread it because it doesn't sound fun.
Yeah, just basically, you know, all the things that you normally have during your period, but amplified and super awesome.
That's just great. Wait, I was going to complain a little bit about my day, but you put my complaint into perspective.
No, please go ahead and complain.
My complaint. So, I live in Seattle, the great Pacific Northwest. And for as interesting of the history as we have out here, there's a lack in more spooky stuff. And I'm on Google earlier, and I come across the Death Museum, Seattle, Washington. I look and I'm like, where is this at? It's like a few blocks from me. I'm so excited. I'm reading descriptions. I'm looking at pictures. This little museum set up with like things from like death and funerary culture, especially like the Victorian era. And I'm like, ooh, like aspiring mortuary archaeologist over here. Like, this sounds great. And then I find out that they closed last year.
Aww.
And I was about to hit him up, be like, yo, I'm getting an anthropology degree. This is my niche. I used to work in a museum. Hire me. Just to find out it's not open anymore.
Aww.
So, yes, poor me. Everybody go.
No. I mean, were you able to figure out like who ran it, that maybe you could reach out to them and see like what the case was, that, you know?
I did. They didn't give me any specifics. They were just like, oh, it's not open anymore, it closed last year. But I do want to ask them, like, so who curated it? Where did the collection go? Because hit me up, please. I can help and contribute to this cause. Anyways, so that's a little about my day. We got to hear a little bit about Tayshia's sad day. So sorry, Tayshia, my condolences.
That's okay.
Now cheer us up with some really depressing witch history.
Well, I was going to say you had a perfect transition there, because I was going to bring up that since it's September, at least when this will come out, it is officially spooky season.
I saw someone call it Sem-tember, as in like cemetery, C-E-M.
Oh.
Sem-tember.
Well, oh, no. Was that last episode when you said something about like...
Last episode was October.
Yes.
And now we're getting into Sem-tember.
Perfect. Well, this spooky season is a time for witches. Although for you and I, that it's always time for witches.
Every time we look in the mirror, yeah.
Yes. Is it witch time? Yes, it is witch time. But so we're going to head back to one of our favorite places, Scotland. And I think this is like our third episode on Scotland. And of course, I wrote in my notes a terrible joke of, do we need to rename our podcast Odd Anthropology of Scotland?
Yes. Wait, Scotland, sponsor us, please. Thank you.
And I did want to also just kind of a quick note that since I'm talking about the story of one of the accused witches, quote, I do want to point out that whenever I say witches in the case of those accused of witchcraft, it is always in quotations. I know that these were people. They were not really witches. Ivy knows that as well. And there's a couple spots in here I'm like, Ivy, feel free to fill in with what you know, because I know you know a lot.
I like to think I do.
And I was initially worried that I wouldn't be able to find enough information to make a full episode. So, like, I had kind of gone back and forth on this topic for a while. But apparently I had forgotten about what became basically my greatest resource was the 3 full episodes of the Witches of Scotland podcast on this topic. Episodes 21, 22, and 23 of the Witches of Scotland podcast by Zoe Venditazzi and Claire Mitchell feature archaeologist Douglas Spears as a guest. And he has become, in my opinion, the leading expert on the topic today. And I cannot recommend these episodes enough. And the whole their whole podcast, super great. But the fact that Douglas could speak on this topic for 3 episodes, his passion and knowledge is just incredible. And he goes into far more depth than I do. So I definitely recommend, if this piques your interest, go check those out.
I am literally going to pull that up on Spotify tonight, assuming it's on Spotify, and start listening.
Yes, yes. I mean, that's where I listen to them, so. Perfect. All right. So we'll start off with a brief overview of the Scottish witch hunch. We'll start off with a brief overview. Witch hunch. A brief overview of the Scottish witch hunts. At least I'm going to try to keep it brief. And Ivy, please feel free to add any of your great knowledge at any point.
Oh, my ADHD is very excited for this. I will try to not interrupt too much, but yeah, this is a topic that we can absolutely nerd out about for hours.
Yes.
So, yeah.
All right. So, from 1563 to 1736, the Witchcraft Act was in effect in Scotland. This made the practice of witchcraft and consulting with witches capital offenses. Earlier in 1560, the Scottish Parliament made Protestantism the official religion, and 3 years later enacted the Witchcraft Act. The Protestant leaders wanted to eliminate Catholicism and the superstitions found in the peasant working class. Scott Richardson Reed, author and folklorist, does a really great job of covering this in a couple chapters in his book, Milldust and Dreaming Bread. Within this act, the Protestant leaders kind of tried to equate Catholicism and witchcraft in order to cause conflict between the two groups, which it did. And while I do agree, Catholicism does have a bit more in witchcraft in common with witchcraft than they would probably like to admit. The fact that the Protestant leaders were using it to divide people and cause harm, that's definitely not good.
Yeah.
Scott also mentions in his fabulous book, I do also very much recommend checking that out if you have any interest in Scottish folk magic, Scottish folk traditions, things like that. He is an incredible folklorist and author. In his book, I lost my place in my notes. He mentions in his fabulous book that the folk beliefs of old had been syncretized into Catholicism, and now the beliefs were being demonized by the Protestant Reformation, which is why many of the victims were poor working class folk.
That never occurred to me, that people could not just demonize, like, pagan, you know, pagan is super broad term. But, you know, some of the, you know, folk beliefs and folk practices, which were sometimes intentionally adopted by Catholicism to help with conversion. But also, yeah, I think you mentioned syncretism sometimes. Yep. these varying beliefs, when you have neighbors of one belief and of another, I mean, over time, they're going to naturally kind of sync up a little bit and influence each other. But yeah, it never occurred to me that that's why there was this kind of attack on Christianity or Catholicism, whatever, from Protestants. Right. So yeah, interesting. Well,
and the working class very much believed in the devil, and so it was very easy for the church to spread fear, which caused people to turn on each other very quickly. And then the cycle began, producing more victims, as the only way these folks knew how to protect themselves from witches were with superstitions, and those were the traditions and traditions the church and ruling class had deemed as witchcraft. So it just kind of kept spiraling of like,
yeah,
this person's a witch. Well, then the villagers were all like, oh no, we're gonna protect against this person, and then they're doing things that are considered witchcraft.
Gosh, and that's the cycle in so much witch panic. That's what happened in Salem here mm-hmm. in the States, you know? It's like, oh no, a witch. Hey, let's do some anti-witch magic. Oh, wait, but it's magic too. Ah.
So for 300 years, all over the country, people were being accused of witchcraft. And so, like, the Malleus Maleficarum by Heinrich, I wasn't sure if it's Cramer or Kramer.
I've always said Kramer, but...
Yeah, came out in 1486, and Demonology by King James VI in 1596. These were tools used to persecute those who others felt were not godly enough. Witch prickers, also in quotations, became a profession, as well as finding devil or witch's marks on someone's body was a sign of mm-hmm. being a witch. And then once someone was accused of being a witch, torture was commonplace, and in Scotland, sleep deprivation was the most common. Unfortunately, other more bodily forms of torture were used as well, but sleep deprivation can be just as horrific, as it affects the mind as well as the body. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. When trials began, fantastical confessions involving devils and Satan were heard from the accused. And I recommend reading the Confessions of Isabel Gowdy if you're interested in learning more about the confessions of witches in Scotland, because she basically is why we have some of the, like, 13 witches in a coven from witches shape-shifting, like, into a cat or a hare. Those are a lot of things that came from her. But today I'm going to talk about another woman who was accused of witchcraft. So it's estimated around 380 people in Fife were accused of witchcraft. And for those that don't know, Fife is a council area, kind of like a county, located in east central Scotland, north of Edinburgh. The area is 512 square miles, or 1,330 kilometers squared. And fun fact, the area is home to one of the major Pictish kingdoms.
Ooh!
So there's a lot of good archaeology happening in Fife.
Hey, we love to hear it.
So in 1704, towards the end of the Witchcraft Act, in the small seaside hamlet of Torryburn, Lilias Ady was accused of witchcraft. Lilias was an older woman, likely between 60 and 70 years old. Not much is known about her, but it has been surmised that she was a poor, lonely, sickly, elderly woman.
Mm.
What we do know about Lilias is found in the Kirk session meetings from the time of her trial and confession. And I was able to find the minutes on Gutenberg.com. And it was funny that we had mentioned, or Ivy had mentioned on, I think, Instagram or something, the Gutenberg Project, or Project Gutenberg. And I was like, oh, I just used that in my notes.
I did, because I was using that to research something else. And I was just like, hey, like, general PSA to people on Instagram. Like, if you're doing research, you can find a lot of, like, really old documents and books on there for free. And you can flip through the whole dang thing right there on your phone or computer. And that's when yep. you were like, I just used it for the story coming up. And that's yes. how I knew. I was like, oh, this story is about to pop off.
It's a really great resource. So yes, definitely check it out if you need to. But so this was minutes and proceedings of the session of Torryburn in Fifeshire concerning witchcraft with the confession of Lilias 80. Quite the title.
Mm-hmm.
These minutes take us back in time and give us a glimpse into the everyday life of the people of Torryburn. It really reads like you were mentioning that you were watching trashy TV before this we came on. It reads like trashy TV. Like it's an interesting read, and it's a short one. So if you wanted to check it out, it's quick. But I'll just kind of summarize it for everyone. So rumors of witchcraft began swirling within the small community of Torryburn. So the minister called an emergency meeting on June 30th, 1704. It had been going around that Jean Bizet had been molested by Satan. She had been very ill, but by the time of the meeting, she was better, and she blamed Lilias 80 and Janet White for her illness. The story goes, on June 13th, Jean had been seen going into different villagers' houses and becoming more and more drunk throughout the day, and seemed strangely distempered. She eventually passed out, and when she came to, she was heard to say, quote, "Beware lest Lilias 80 come upon you and your child," end quote, and continued to accuse Lilias and Janet of witchcraft. When she returned home, she was very ill, claiming she was bewitched. But by the next day, she was feeling better.
Interesting.
Not many believed that this incident was witchcraft, but that Jean had gotten drunk and had a hangover again.
That would track. That would track.
Janet White was claimed to have threatened Jean Bizet with mischief just before the bewitchment incident occurred. But Janet said she had never threatened any such thing. It actually had come out that Jean, the drunk, owed Janet money for a barrel of ale, and since Jean didn't pay Janet, Janet wasn't able to pay the ale man. So Jean claims Janet put a spell on her as punishment.
Okay.
If you could follow that.
I mean, really, that is like 90% of witchcraft accusations is someone's right. mad at someone, and they just go, witch.
Pretty much, yep. Thankfully, the minister sees through all of this gossip and throws out the case, and all is fine for a couple of weeks. Unfortunately, another woman falls ill and accuses Lilias 80 of using witchcraft to make her sick. The Kirk minutes aren't as detailed with this accusation, but the claim sticks, and on July 29th, Lilias 80 is incarcerated.
And how old is she again?
We don't officially know, but they think between like 60 and 70 at this time.
Okay.
Yeah. So the next day, her interrogation begins. When she was asked to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, she declared, quote, "What I am to say shall be as true as the sun is in the firmament." She was asked if she was in compact with the devil, and she replied, quote, "I am in compact with the devil, and have been so since before the second burning of the witches in this place." And as a side note, the second burnings took in that area took place in 1666. So, quite a long time.
Yeah.
She said, quote, "The first time she met with the devil was at the Gullet River between Torryburn and New Mills. In the harvest, before the sun set, where he trusted her to meet the day after, which trust she kept, and the devil took her to a stook side and caused her to renounce her baptism. The ceremony he used was, he put one hand on the crown of her head and the other on the soles of her feet, with her own consent, and caused her to say all was the devil betwixt the crown of her head and the soles of her feet. And there the devil lay her..." Jiminy Christmas.
Don't you love the old-timey verbiage?
"And there the devil lay with her carnally, and that his skin was cold, his color black and pale. He had a hat on his head, and his feet was cloven like the feet of a stirk, as she observed when he went from her." End quote.
The feet of a stirk?
I believe... That it's like a a calf, like a cow.
Oh, yeah, a young bull or cow.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So Douglas Spears points out that there were witch trials in Fife that explained the renouncing of the baptism word for word exactly as Lilias said. Spears believes that it isn't hard to make the conclusion that the session minutes of Lilias were likely copied or forged from these earlier, quote, confessions. He also notes that the minutes were likely written after the actual interrogation, so it would make sense that some of the confessions were forged.
Yeah. Especially during, you know, interrogations and stuff, and even, like, a lot of courtroom documents. Sometimes there isn't someone in there capable of keeping track of everything as it's being said, so a lot of it comes afterwards, and it's like, oh, what did they say to this? Oh, I think they might have said this.
Right. And he, like I said, he goes into so much more detail with this, and there's a few other, like, kind of, like, little twists and notes that he discovered that I didn't include, because, like I said, I think you need to go listen to those three episodes.
This is not going to be three parts.
No, this is not going to be three parts.
Hour-long episodes.
they are all three, like, hour-long episodes.
Love it.
Yes. Anyway, so Lilias was interrogated 6 times over the next 4 weeks and made claims, quote, that after she entered into compact with Satan, he appeared to her some hundreds of times, and went on to name other women who were at these meetings with the devil. Mm-hmm. These women were also brought in and questioned over the course of the 4 weeks. Throughout this time, Lilias was being held in the parish church in Torryburn, most likely locked in a small, secure room with little food. We can also assume that she had been sleep-deprived, as was the typical torture of the time. And keep in mind, she was also an old woman, and her health seemed to be failing before the interrogations even began.
You've got Gam Gam shackled up in there. You're
right, like, feeding her, like, her crust of bread and
maggots. Yeah. Jeez.
So then on the 29th of August, 1704, the minutes state, quote, Lilias Ady declared some hours before her death that what she had said of Elizabeth Williamson and Agnes Curry, two of the women that she had accused, was as true as the gospel, and added, it is as true as the sun shines on that floor, and dim as my eyes are, I see that. Mm. We don't know officially how she died that day, but there are 2 theories that have persisted. One is that Lilias committed suicide, not being able to take the torture and interrogations any longer. The other is that she died of maltreatment and old age. Mm-hmm. After her death, there are no other interrogations or trials of those that were accused of witchcraft during Lilias's interrogations. Douglas Spears mentions that these Kirk meetings were not legal trials, and that for a, quote, witch to be killed, they would need to have due proper authority. But Lilias died in the Kirk's possession without that proper authority. So
some
Spears
red
believes
flags popping
yes,
up.
Yes.
Shocking.
So Spears believes that the minutes were most likely written and the confessions were faked after her death to remove the blame of Lilias' death from the parish and unto her, since she was a witch. And then on the 3rd of September, the minutes note that Lilias was, quote, buried within the sea mark at Torryburn. If Lilias' death had been a suicide, her burial location could make a little bit more sense. The Church of Scotland viewed suicide as a sin, so anyone that committed suicide would be buried in unconsecrated ground. In seaside areas during this time, the intertidal zone was common for suicidal burials. This was considered a liminal space outside of God's grace. Lilias was buried in a wooden box covered with a 6-foot by 3-foot flat sandstone slab. And this is known as a revenant burial. And Ivy knows all about those.
Yes. I love me some spooky undead beings.
Yes. So it was thought in the Christian belief at the time that if an individual gave themselves over to Satan after their death, Satan could reanimate them into doing his bidding. So when burying Lilias, the parish went to great lengths to ensure she would not be able to return, burying her in the liminal space in a locked wooden box. There is a belief in Scotland that spirits, witches, fair folk, they could not cross running water. So she's buried on the other side of the river from the parish.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I was going to say, did you have...
They were really worried about Gam Gam coming back as a revenant. My goodness.
They put in all the stops.
Yeah, geez, you bury a sickle around her neck or something? I think that was mostly Poland that did that. I think that was also vampires, but see, revenant, vampires, eh.
Pretty much same thing. No, very similar. And so over time, the location of Lilias's grave was never forgotten as stories were passed down generation to generation of the Witch of Torryburn, keeping Lilias alive despite the best efforts of those taken to keep her in her grave. And then in 1852, a group of people dug up Lilias's grave at the request of an antiquarian, Joseph Neil Patton. Patton had an interest in phrenology, which is the pseudoscience that one could look at the shape and lumps of a skull to determine the character and mentality of a person.
Yeah, and it was not taken advantage of by like racists at all, okay?
Nope, not at all.
No. It was not used for ill intent ever.
No. Well, and also just was not a very sound science anyway.
Also, yeah, just not true. And I mean, not all phrenologists were so like malicious in intent, but you bet the white supremacists really tried to be like, but look at my head shape. I'm better than you. So
right. Yeah. Jumped all over that one. And in kind of in a similar way, Patton really wanted to look at the skull of a witch. So newspapers all over Scotland reported this event and added descriptions of the bones of Lilias, saying her thigh bones were of extraordinary stature, like likely that she was like 6 foot tall.
Okay.
And we do know that a number of other bones were taken. So like her skull was taken and given to Patton. I guess I didn't really quite specifically say that, but other bones were also taken, some ribs and a femur bone, as well as pieces of the wooden box that she was buried in that were made into walking sticks.
Oh, macabre. Yeah. Okay.
So Joseph Neil Patton kept Lilias's skull in his collection until his death in the 1870s, where her skull was willed to his firstborn son, Joseph Noel Patton. And he actually was a famous artist. And he had used pieces of his father's collection in like still life paintings of his works. And so he does have a few skulls in some of his paintings, and it could be that one of them is Lilias's.
What's the guy's name again?
Joseph Noel Patton, like
okay.
N-O-E-L. I say there's one specific one that Douglas Spears mentions, but I didn't write it down because I didn't want it to be super similar to their podcast. So I was like, Google it on their own. But it's guy sitting at a desk, and then like kind of behind him, there's a skull.
Okay, because I love a still life. I especially love a Venetia painting with skulls, and then also it like might be the skull of an accused witch. Like, what is all my worlds colliding right now?
Yes. Yeah, like I said, I'll see if I can find it, and maybe we can use that as one of the pictures that we include in the...
It'll go on the gram for sure.
So Patton's son kept the skull until 1884, when it was given to Dr. William Dow, who gave talks on the skull at St. Andrews University. It was understood that he then gave it to the St. Andrews University Museum, but the museum claims to never have had it.
Wouldn't be the first time something got lost in their archives, especially human remains.
Unfortunately. We knew it was photographed in 1901 for an article in the Dunfermline Press, but then it disappears again. And then there was another article in a 1938 paper placing the skull's location at the Empire Exhibition in Glasgow, where it was on display with other objects relating to witchcraft in Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
So although her skull is still missing, Lilius's story does not end there. In 2014.
what year is it?
Don't ask me. In 2014, archaeologist Douglas Spears was hired to locate her burial again. So over time, like I had said, the location was known, but then kind of over time, you know, the shorelines changed.
Yeah, underground shifts.
Yep, it was like, it wasn't like an exact known location anymore. So mm-hmm. while there were many clues as to where her stone slab was, the exact location was not clear anymore. After a couple of days of searching the tidal zone, Douglas and his team found the large sandstone slab covered in seaweed. And Spears has spent much of his career researching and trying to locate the missing bones of Lilius. He's trying so hard to put her back together and give her a proper burial.
Yeah.
And then in 2017, forensic artist Christopher Wren from Dundee University was able to digitally recreate Lilius's face based on the 1901 photographs of her skull. And you should look it up. It's a beautiful recreation, and it's really haunting to be able to look into the face of this poor woman who has endured so much over all these years.
Oh, she's just a little grandma.
You've been saying that this whole time, but it's seriously true.
She really, really is. It's one thing to, you know, hear these stories, and then, yeah, this obviously wasn't 100% how she looked, but I mean,
right.
To be looking at their face, a likeness of their face is just, makes it all the more real. It's not just a story.
Right. Well, and thankfully, Lilius' story does still continue to this day, as in 2024, the Fife Witches Trail opened, a memorial walk along sites involved in the trials in Fife, including a stop at Lilius' grave. There are beautifully illustrated discs along the walk that tell bits of the stories of the women and mark significant locations along the trail. And this is absolutely on my list of places to go when I finally get over to Scotland.
Scotland, please, like, sponsor us. Country of Scotland, sponsor the podcast.
Well, see, my problem is there are so many places that I want to go and I want to see and experience that I'm like, I don't know that I would ever come back home. There's too many things I want to do and experience. Too much. So, Scotland, sponsor moving our families please. Over.
Please. I will find her skull.
Yeah. Ooh, Douglas.
Wait.
Dr. Spears, we would love to help out.
We will help free volunteers, free labor. Here we are.
Yes, we sign us up. But that is the ongoing story of Lilius 80. It's very tragic, but I love that even with all of the efforts of those to keep her buried and unknown, her story is out there and on the minds and tongues of us today, keeping her alive.
I'm really mad that they haven't found all of her bones.
I know. Well, and like...
And like, Douglas, was she actually like 6 feet tall? Like, were those her femurs that they found?
I mean, they... I do think that Douglas, like, believes that that was her because already, like, the box and, like, the slab was very large to begin with.
Uh-huh.
And so I think she just happened to be a taller woman. But
I love,
like,
that my husband is super, super tall, so.
Some people, they got it.
Long folks.
But he has, like, studied those pictures of her skull and, like, has been working so close with this case, he knows, if he were to, like, see her skull across the room, he would know it. Like, I mean, she had such a very distinct, I don't know if I just missed that part in my notes where I was reading, or if I didn't put it in there, but, like, she had kind of, like, teeth kind of flared forward a bit, and so, like, she has a very distinct looking skull, and so he is confident if he ever sees it, he will know it is her, and so he'll be able to
It's like she's gotta her. Be in an archive, and if not that, like, someone's private collection.
Right.
But someday, like, someone's gonna come across her, post a picture of the skull or something, she'll go for auction.
I'm really hoping that someone's going to open up their chicken basket and find Lilius' skull.
Oh my gosh. Okay, for anyone that's never, like, listened to our episodes, doesn't follow us on social media, I covered the Toland Man, famous bog body, and his toe was missing for years. And they found it in a little chicken wicker basket, which is exactly what it sounds like, a wicker basket shaped like a chicken that he kept, the guy that took his toe kept his toe in. Maybe there's a bigger chicken wicker basket.
Everyone check your chicken wicker baskets.
Everyone please check your chicken wicker baskets now.
That is such a tongue twister. Check your and chicken also, wicker baskets.
So between the last episode and this episode, we also had corpse, wax, soap, candles, and then you mentioned that people took wood from her coffin and used it to make walking sticks.
Mm-hmm.
So we also, like, we're getting a nice collection of items.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Our merchandise is going to be, as the kids say, lit.
As
I think.
The
kids, do they still say that?
Lit. Okay, so anytime I use language like that around my little teenage nephews, they'll get on my case and they'll be like, you're only saying that to try to be cool like me. And then I snap back at them and I'm like, actually, fun fact, kids were saying that when I was in high school still. So, and then I said it to be ironic and now I say it unironically. So sue me. Tayshia, that was a fantastic episode, although I'm very upset that we have a cliffhanger.
I know. It's not.
But we'll give it. Oh my God, the second he finds her bones or something, or there's, like, a lead, we will be doing an update.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Also, this will, slight spoiler alert, this will carry in nicely to the topic of October's episode.
Yes.
And I'll just leave it at that, and I'm sure everyone can put two and two together, but it's the season of the witch.
It's spooky season, the season of the witch, and you know, when Ivy is in charge of October, it's going to be good.
People, listen, your episode on what was his name? Homo floresiensis. The Hobbit.
Oh, The Hobbit, yeah.
That episode pulled numbers. It is our most listened to episode. I want to say, I think it has over like 300 listens now. Like, oh, more wow. than double like most of our other episodes. So I feel kind of bad. I'm like, listen, okay, we hear what the people want, but we got to talk about some witches first because it's...
It's spooky season.
Because it was October, and then it's September, and then we get real October. So, okay, hold on. Like, we're going to talk about ghosts and witches, and then we'll go back to the other stuff.
I'll say, maybe for November, I'll try and find another interesting hominid or something that we can...
There we go. I can try. I can see if I can work one into my next episode. It'll be a stretch.
Go with the witches. No, yeah. go with the witches. Go with what we know best.
Oh my gosh, speaking of, because you just did an episode on a Scottish witch. Let me Google it real quick. Because somewhere online there's like there's an interactive map.
Yes.
I wanted to shout it out.
I might have it in my show notes, in my resources.
Because sometimes I'll pull it up and I just like sit there. So it's, I mean, to people listening, it's literally just a map of Scotland with little witch icons, and they're color coded and the color code kind of tells you, like, I can't remember if it's like what exactly they were accused of or something, but you know, you can zoom in, you can tap on them, and it'll give you any known details about that single accused witch. And it's really, it puts into perspective just how many people were accused when you see this map and you just see all the little speckled icons just coding Scotland. It's like, oh yeah, they're like, their witch trials were absolutely just
right for insane. Such a small, I mean, one island anyway, including England, but just Scotland. What did I start with? I said 3,873 women and men were accused.
Yeah, crazy.
And 2/3 of them were executed.
Yep. We will link it below. And on that note, I have a book on witchcraft I was going to suggest that I finished recently, but it will also totally spoil my next topic. So let's, and I mean, if you've listened to this, the last 5 episodes of this podcast, you know what I'm going to talk about.
But, but no spoilers. But
I have to pretend. It's like sometimes when I start an episode and I'm like acting like it's a big secret, as if it's not like in the title of the episode that everyone just clicked on. Also, sorry everyone if I sounded really echoey in this episode. I am recording not in my usual location because that room was really warm because it was kind of hot today, and I live in Seattle where we don't have AC. All we have is a window unit.
Yay!
And on that note, anything else to add, Tayshia?
I don't think so. I have my little blurb here that I basically just copy and pasted from my last episode. So
okay.
Of just the where you can find us on Instagram or Substack, where you can subscribe to our posts for $5 a month and get unlimited access to all of the articles Ivy has been writing, covering all sorts of fun anthropology topics. And she switched things up with a new Teaching Tuesdays series. And
yeah.
That's been a lot of fun to have those articles coming in to your inbox just every Tuesday. They're right there waiting for you to give you some fun information.
Mm-hmm. They are free initially, but at the end of each month, every, you know, weekly newsletter from that month gets booted into the archive. And when you pay, you get access to the archive. Woohoo!
Yes.
Which and is then quite a bit of posts at this point.
Yeah, Ivy's been working hard, and that I think that's pretty much it. You know how to find us. Reach out. We'd love to chat, talk about anthropology things and ghoul mm-hmm. things.
Anthropology things, ghoul things.
You know.
All right. And everything's linked below, so check it out.
Yep, do that. It's late. We did another late night recording.
We can just end every episode. Everything's linked below. Do that. Okay, bye.
My end note for this was, may your spooks be spooky.
Okay. All right. And there we go. And it is officially September when this episode comes out, so go visit your local cemetery. And good night.
Good night.
Or good morning, or good afternoon, whenever you're listening to this. Okay, bye.
Good whatever time you're listening.
Good whatever time you're listening. Bye.